objects I'm going to work with. For this whole talk, M is going to be a smooth closed manifold. And I'm not putting any geometry on it, so it's a smooth manifold. And N inside M is going to be a submanifold. Usually they'll be oriented. What I do need is that the normal bundle is oriented. All right, and for any such pair, I'm going to take, well, let me start with loops on M. That's going to be the space of base loops. So I'll assume that gamma of 1 always goes to some fixed base points here. And if I don't want to have a base point, if I don't care when my loop starts, I'll get loops on M, free loops on M. So same thing without this restrictions. So all my loops, all my paths are going to be piecewise smooth. But you can do it with continuous loops. You can do it with smooth loops. It doesn't really matter. It's just a bit easier to work with piecewise smooth. And then to use N, I also have another one of these. So it's going to be P and M, and these are paths in M, again piecewise smooth, and I'll assume that it starts and ends on your submanifold. So for the last 8 years, string topologists have been using these spaces and constructing tons of algebraic operation on its homology, on its chains, to try to get at the manifold and at some manifolds. And it turns out that most of what's been constructed, if not everything that's been constructed until recently, has seen really little of the manifold structure, frankly, nothing at all. Turns out that most of the structure we've constructed, if you have two manifolds, and a homotopy equivalence between them that takes the orientation class of one to the orientation class of the other one, it's going to induce an isomorphism of these algebraic structure. Okay, so they're nice invariants, they're nicely constructed, but if you're interested in the smooth structure, it doesn't actually give you any extra information. So this was a bit frustrating for some of us, the ones that like geometry a bit more. And I was listening to a talk by Lenny Ng, and using similar ideas, but coming from a different point of view, he was working with not contact homology, and using similar ideas that we've been using to construct invariants on this, he managed to get an interesting not invariant. So from our point of view, that's not to be expected, because all the structure we've been constructed, even at the chain level, didn't see anything about the submanifold, the embedding. It only saw something about the homotopy type of these inclusions. All right, so because it's not quite what we've been doing, what I want to do today is just go over a construction that's similar to his, but work for any submanifold. And once I have that, I'll explain to you what happens in Lenny's case that makes it a bit more sensitive to this kind of information. All right, so inside these paths here, I have constant paths at N. And I'm going to look at the chains on those paths relative to the constant. So the theorem is that this object here has a product, as a co-product. And the co-product is not quite associative at the chain level, but it's as associative as you can expect it to be. So there is an A infinity co-product on the chains here. So that's the first part of it. And then the second part is using this A infinity co-product, you can build an invariant, so we can build H of N inside M, which sometimes, I'll explain exactly what sometimes means here, sees the embedding. Don't mean the whole embedding. A non-trivial invariant of the embedding. All right, so later today I'll actually describe how this structure is constructed. And it's pretty geometric. There's a nice picture, so it's easy to follow in a talk. And then I'll describe this invariant. And I'll show you a couple of examples, including the one that inspired all of this. I'll get back to knots and see exactly what kind of invariant you can get out of this for knots. All right. Just one thing to note. If you start with, if you're interested in the loop space here, you can get it out of this as well. If you take X to be a manifold, oriented and closed, you can look at X as sitting inside X cross X. So you can take this to be N, this to be M. And if you look at what this case is in this particular case, what you would get, well, we'll look at paths in X cross X that start and end on the diagonal. So really, I can think of those as two paths in M. In X. And I need the two paths to start at the same point. And I need them to end at the same point. Right, so what I have here, I have two points and two paths, like this. And so really, if I compose them, one forward, one backwards, I get a loop. And any loop can be written that way. So this is homeomorphic to the loop space. Okay. So really, talking about this path space, it's just a generalization of the loop space. It includes the loop space. And frankly, the loop space was the first example. All right, so let me construct this. I'll show how to construct the co-product here. We won't worry too much about the higher homotopies today. So let me remind you what I mean by, I guess, some of you might be familiar with A infinity algebra. So let me just remind you what, or tell you what I mean by an A infinity co-algebra. I'm going to have some A here. And for today, I'm going to assume that A is graded. So A is graded. We have a bunch of operation. first one is going to be a differential. So m1 squared is 0. m2 is going to be our coproduct. And that's going to be a chain map with regard to this differential. And then we'll have m3 . This is a homotopy. Between the two compositions. And you'll get higher operations, higher homotopy. From A and to so it's a bit more than just homotopic up to associative up to homotopy. You actually are asking that the space of all possible coproducts and composition of these coproducts has no topology in it. So whenever you have a bunch of homotopies that link back to the same product, you're asking that you can put a cell in the space of coproducts, and that cell is exactly what describes these Fn's. All right, so let's construct M2. M1 is just a regular differential. All right, so if we want to construct M2, we're going to look at the following space. We're going to look at, the notation's a bit strange, but I got in trouble a bunch of times because the letters I would write on the board were actually acronyms for terrorist organization. I had PKK there, I had KKK, I had all sorts of things. This notation hasn't gotten me in trouble yet, so I'm sticking to it. So this means that I have paths in M, tells me that they're going to be at N on 0 and 1 and some time in between. So really I have a path and a time. I'm specifying the time, gamma 0, gamma t, and gamma 1 are all in N. And so that's a subspace of my original space of paths. And I'm going to put 0, 1 here, but really it's the same thing I talked about at the beginning. And cross I. So I have this inclusion here. And I'm going to use exactly this inclusion. So I have Pn 0, 1 cross I inside this. I have Pn 0 t 1. Let me call this map rho. I have p 0 n 1. And then if I have a path that starts end on n, and sometimes in the middle at a fixed point goes back to n, what I could do is split it up into two different paths that start and end on n. So I have Pn cross Pn. And this is really just you just split the path at time t, and you reparametrize the two parts you have. So I'll first write out what M2 is, then I'll draw a picture that's going to tell you everything you need to know about it. All right, so if I start with a chain on the space I cared about, and remember I'm modding out by constant path, I'll say a word why you need to do that a bit later on. What I can do is take this embedding of infinite dimensional manifold and try to build a transfer map. So try to take a chain here and intersect it with this. Some map. So Roshi. Oh, sorry. Forgot some part. Now take the fundamental class of the interval to land in the right hand side. N cross I union PN 01 cross 01. Now I'm intersecting. So I'm losing the codimension here, which is the codimension of n inside m. I'm landing inside that 0 t1. And rel, the same thing here. Again, I'll give you a picture that's going to tell you exactly what's going on, and then you're splitting up. And you get CP, C star, P, and M. All right, so I'll draw a picture, and that should be more convincing than what I just did. All right, so let's say that I have my submanifold N coming through like this, and I have a one chain alpha inside PN. So let me just draw it like this. All right, so this is alpha here. So what this M2 is doing is it's taking that entire chain and looking at where the chain actually passes through N again, regardless of where you are on the path. So here there's only one point that passes through N again. And so if I take this operation and apply it to alpha, what I'll get is I'll get that M2 of alpha is, well, I'm intersecting with the submanifold that passes through this, so what I'm keeping is this yellow path here. And so that's where I land here. And then I split up into two different paths. I'm sorry, guys. And back here. And so this is going to be gamma 1 tensor gamma 2, where gamma 1 is this path, and gamma 2 is this path. So this picture is the whole idea. You have this family of paths, and you're looking at where it intersects your submanifold again. And the points where it intersects your submanifold is exactly when you can split those things up. So in some sense, what we're trying to do is to count things again, but we'll never get, because we don't have any geometry, we'll never get like a finite number of points. So what we just do is think about families and make everything continuous or smooth. Don't expect to get just one, but we get just homology instead. right, so let me just say that this picture is quite nice, but there is a bit. I mean, the main part, the main difficulty here is constructing the shriek map, because you have things that have infinite dimensional, but if you evaluate at t here, you land inside n. In general, if you evaluate at t here, you land inside n. And that saves you. So that tells you that the codimension of this embedding of infinite dimensional manifold is a codimension of n and m. And it also tells you how to try to build a tubular neighborhood and everything like that. All right, so let me give you a couple of examples of M2, and then I'll move on to construct the invariant that you get out of this A infinity structure. I should leave that up there. It's more helpful than this. The higher homotopies come from the fact that you have to pick a way of defining this, and there are different ways of doing it. They all fit in a contractible family, so there's no higher topology there, but at the chain level, you can still see all of it. So first example, I'm going to take M to be a sphere. I'm going to try some easy ones so that you really see what happens. And M is just going to be a point on the sphere. So the north pole of the sphere. All right, so we're interested in paths. That start and end at that point. So we're really on the loop space, but the base loop space of M. All right, so we're constructing some additional structure on the base loop space of M, which has been studied tons and tons and tons by homotopy theorists. But the structure we have, I haven't seen anywhere. So let's see. The homology of the base loop space of a sphere is quite simple. Base loop space is Zx. And x comes from the fact that you can map Sn minus 1 in the base loops of Sn by thinking of Sn minus 1 as the equator in the sphere. And it tells you in which direction to go. So if I have a point z here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go down along a geodesic that passes through z. And on my way up, I'm always going to take the same way up. I'm going to pass through some fixed point. So that's gamma z. I have z mapping to gamma z, and x is the image of Sn minus 1. I like to think of it as Sn minus 1, but really, you should think of it as the tangent space at that one base point. So it's a tangent point at the north pole at n. All right, so you have the unit tangent space at the point you start. It tells you in what direction is you're going. And if you take the round sphere, you'll be able to go all the way to the end and come back using one fixed way. All right, so this gives you a nice representative for x. And now using it, you can figure out what m2 of x should be. Oh, yeah, and you can think of other higher elements by just going through all the possibility multiple times, time after time. So x is in. All right, right, so the chains we're interested in, the homology we care about, is the leaf space on Sn modulo a point. So that's just killing the first group in dimension 0, so it's x times zx. And now the coproduct on homology is going to give us something pretty simple, just something that looks a lot like the stupid coproduct you could write, except that there's a strange thing where you take I plus j to be k minus 1 and not k. So let me just explain why this is, and then I'll move on to looking at the free loop space. So we have, for x to the k is going to be this map here, which tells you a bunch of different directions to go into. You take the first one, you go to the other side, come back up with the fixed way, take the second one, third one, fourth one. You take all of those directions. And xk is the image of the fundamental class here. Right. So once you have that, you want to know when it passes back to a point. To make sure that intersection happens well, I need to move that point around. So what I'm going to do is take it to be, so this is n. I have a fixed way back here. I'm going to take my point to be somewhere along here. So when you take your chain and you wiggle it around, it's the same as wiggling that point around. So I'm going to move it outside of that way back, the fixed way back I'm taking. And so really, I'm intersecting xk, and I'm looking at when it goes back to that point. Well, it's going to go back to that point if, well, let me take it to be here. If the element I'm taking here is p. If the first one is p, if the second one is p, if the third one is p, if at some point I'm passing through p again, then it's going to be in the intersection. And so what I get when I apply m2 to it is I'm fixing one of these k times to go through p, but the other ones are still fixed. Are still free. So what you get is that m2 of x to the k, you need to pick when you pass back through p, and then when you pass back through p, you split it up into two parts, so you get xi, xk minus I minus. And so this is a pretty simple example, but it does give us a coproduct on this homology. And it gives us, if you don't like coalgebra, I'm just doing coalgebra because that's where I'm going with knots, but if you don't like coalgebras, you can do algebras, and then it's going to give us an algebra structure on the cohomology of this, which is a bit surprising. All right, so I'll move on to something else that gets this infinity structure and takes an invariant out of this. If I have time later on, I'll do another one of these examples. All right. So once you have an infinity structure, you want to be able to take invariants out of it. And one way to do this is, if you have an infinity algebra, you take Hochschild homology. In this case, I'm going to do something a tiny bit different. Won't look too different, but it actually makes a huge difference later on. So I'm going to define an invariant here. I'm going to take C to B, the sum of those chains I cared about, and I'm going to take tensor algebra. My derivative is going to take all of my MIs and just put them together. So dn from C star to the n back to C. D is going to be a sum of just a bunch of identities. Then you apply some ML, and then you have the identity again. For I plus J equals K minus 1, and you sum over L. All right, so you apply all the MIs in all possible way, and H is going to define my invariant to be the homology of. So let me do an example that relates back to Lenny's work. So let's see what happens if we have a knot in S3. I guess I'm good for a moment. All right, so let's say I have a knot inside S3. My structure gives me, well, first thing would be M2 in paths from K to S3, real S3. So from P to C star PK S3 tensor 2. And it's decreasing dimension by 1 less than the codimension. So I'm running into P minus 1. Right, and I have higher ones as well. If you take just H0 of this, instead of looking at all different ranks, you just take H0. I'm going to write this as a proposition because my work in it was just to say, well, it's not quite what Lenny did, but here's how to relate it to Lenny's work. And according to Lenny, who's computed this for tons and tons of different knots, you get that HK inside S3 is a so the first part of this proposition is just to try to figure out how to relate what we've done to a combinatorial not invariant. So if we're interested in H0, we care about chains of degree 0 modulo things that hit them. So really, H0 of a knot inside S3, well, that's just tensor algebra of the chains of degree zero in PKK, PKN, N. And I'm going to do a bit of a trick. I'm going to take transverse chains just to make it much easier. And I'm going to mud out by just D1 of C, tensor K, of C1 C star of blah, blah, blah. In degree one. All right? And I'm going to take transverse here as well. All right. So what does it mean for it to be transverse? Well, you want the image that you look at, the family of paths, as a submanifold, as a subspace of N, to be transverse to whatever's coming, whatever N is. And so in this case, what it means is that you're taking chains that don't intersect the knot anywhere but at the start. So it's the free the tensor algebra on paths in S3 that avoid the knot away from 0, 1. And are at the knot at 0 and at 1. All right, so this generates your invariant. And then what are you modding out by? So I'll show you what D of a one-dimensional family relates to the example I wrote down a tiny bit earlier. So let's say I again have that one-dimensional family hitting the knot in exactly one spot. We already know what M2 is. So let me write down what D is. All right, so if alpha is in the chains of a knot like this, well, we know that M2 of alpha is gamma 1 tensor gamma 2, where this is gamma 1 and this is gamma 2. And then we have that the big D of alpha is, well, M1, which was the boundary. And then there's a sign here depending on orientation. And then we have M2 of alpha. So really, this derivative here for a family like this tells you that the path you have above alpha and the path you have below beta differ by something that has to do with the gamma. So alpha minus beta plus or minus gamma tensor gamma 2. All right. So let me write this as a relation, and then I can give you some computations. So we get a Skine relation that tells you how to pass something through the knot. So the knot's in pink. So what we get is that killing D underneath give us, if this is the knot, if you have your path going above the knot, well, it can feel free to pass it through, but you have a cost, and that cost is exactly that M2. So it's going to be equal to something that goes underneath the knot. Plus or minus, in this case, it's plus with the orientation that I wrote down. I'll get this. So this is what you get. You take all chains that don't intersect. You're not in the middle. And if you want to compare two things, you can pass it through the knot, but you have to pay by this higher thing. And you can actually use this relation to compute this invariant. Using braid representation of your knots and all sorts of things, you get that, for example, for the trefoil, you get something that looks like ZX. And for the unknot, you get something that is just Z. Okay. All right, so already this shows that you have a non-trivial knot invariant. In fact, all the computations that have been made seem to imply that, well, it seems like every single knot we try has a different answer. Let me put it that way. I'm not saying it's a full invariant or anything. I'm just saying of the simple ones we managed to compute, it seems to distinguish all. All right, so this is just one of the invariants, right? This is just the degree zero. So what I'm going to discuss next is going to tell you why this is hard. So the first thing is that this is quite mysterious for people that have been following string topology, because everything we've done seems to just see homotopy type of the inclusion and nothing else. So the fact that you can see knots is very, very surprising. So my question is, why? And I'll show it to you. I'll talk about conjectures and results that so turns out that rationally, at least, you could do the same game without assuming anything about your space, except that it has a Poincaré duality map. Right, so what is that? What am I saying exactly? And when I say exactly, this is still going to be vague, but just say that rationally, there is a similar structure which only sees the homotopy type. All right, so using a specific model for the loop space, I can actually get that I can construct this without assuming much about my space. So it seems to imply that we shouldn't be able to see these knot invariants. All right, so there are two problems with this, and that's why it's vague. The first one is I don't know if it's the same one. It's built in a similar way. So that's going to be my first conjecture. Well, actually, that's going to be my main conjecture. Well, let me put that as the first conjecture. And second, the same thing can be done over Z. So that whole structure I've described, the A-infinity coalgebra structure, seemed to see nothing of the manifold. All right, so that seems to contradict this result. But here's the weird thing. All right, so consequences of this while V infinity coalgebra is homotopic to, if two manifolds are homotopic to each other in the right way, then the infinity coalgebra structure is the same as well. So the first invariant I discussed, just that structure of an infinity algebra, doesn't actually see anything. But somehow what we do to it is a bit strange in certain cases. And so the consequence of that first consequence is that in some cases we don't see anything. So if the codimension of n inside m is at least 3, then that invariant is an invariant of the homotopy. Of the pair nm. So the coalgebra structure doesn't actually see anything if you're allowed to move it slightly. They're the same. But what we're doing to it in the case where the codimension is 2, like in the case of the knot, is picking up more than just the type of the infinity algebra. So let me show you where this codimension problem is, and I'll show you what happens for knots. Yeah, so it is over, well, yes. There's a structure over Z. Everything I meant to do today was over Z. There's a slight problem with taking the product outside of the chain, outside of the homology over Z, but for the chains it works, and there's no problem. It works over Z. What I'm saying is if you're allowed to use rational numbers, then you have rational models for the homology of the loop space. And those rational models are like forms but over the rational. They work really well, and they're pretty robust. And using them, you have a pretty combinatorial model. You can construct these invariants. Using work of Felix and Thomas and different people, you actually have a part of string topology done. And using what they've done, you can actually construct this by just taking it a step forward further. So you have a natural way of constructing it that follows string topology using these rational models. But the problem is you don't, if they're rational homotopy type things, but they're not. They're not precise enough to see anything of the manifold, but it's not clear that what we're doing is exactly the same thing as the other one. But it seems like it, and it should be true, we just haven't proven it yet. So once you have that, you have everything else following, but I still owe you an explanation about the knot problem. Why do we see knots when we're not supposed to? All right, so let's look at what happens when the codimension changes. Did I answer your question? I kind of at some point I thought I did, and I went on talking, and I forgot what I said. All right, so why do we have codimension of n greater or equal to 3? Well, let me put this whole thing in this plane here. If I have k inside S3, for example, what I'll get is I have, let me put the line a bit higher. I have C0 here. I have C1, and that's my M1, my derivative. And then I have C2, C3, etc. Now, the second map I have goes from these and map, that's M2, to C0, tensor C0. And here to C tensor 2 in degree 1, etc. All right, so this is 0. And then this one here, M2, hits C0, 3, etc. All right, so in the case where you have codimension 2, you'll always get this picture. And if you notice these diagonals here, they're infinite. So that's everything that has total degree 0, that's infinite in this case. Which tells you that the usual spectral sequence that you'll use won't converge in this case. And because it won't converge, and you can see it in a picture for the knots, what's going to happen if you probably hate spectral sequences. But let me just tell you what happens. The first thing you do is you take that horizontal map, you use homology instead of chains, and then you look at M2, and then M3 is going to give you another derivative, M4 is going to give you another derivative. The first thing you do is you get to the homology, that entire diagonal disappears. Because H0 those paths, rel n, well, k in this case, is 0. And geometrically, in the picture, what happens is that I can always take my path and pass it through the knot and split it into two bits. And I can do so without any boundary because there's no, any two paths are blah, blah, blah. You can reach it from any one path to any other path. You can pass through a family of paths. And so you always get that this path is going to be, I'm not saying this well. If you have any path, there's a family that collapses it to a constant path. And so what happens is you can actually write this path as a product of splittings of the path. So that tells you that anything that comes from here, you can see it here. Anything that comes from here, you can see it here. Anything that comes from here, you can see it here. So you don't need to keep it here because it's here. But then you don't keep it anywhere. And so the invariant we see of knots actually lives out at infinity. And so you can't do it in that case. So let me just draw the picture of what happens if the codimension is, let's say, 3. Just to have a specific number. So for codimension equals to 3, but really for anything higher than 3, but I'll do 3 here, we still have the same thing. But if you have codimension 3, M2 is going from C2 to C0, tensor C0. Okay, so instead of being here, it's a bit off. And then you have C tensor 2 in degree 1. You have C tensor 2 in degree 2. This one's going to be 0. This one's going to be 0. And then the next one, you can think of it as lying here. C0 tensor 3. All right, so the codimension of the manifold comes into play because it determines how you regrade everything, and it determines the slope here. And now that slope is extremely important because now none of those diagonals are infinite. So you'll never be able to push things to infinity. So in this case, you'll get a convergent spectral sequence. And so if you have two different models that have a nice map between them, the spectral sequence is going to tell you that in the end, you'll get the same answer. Doesn't work here. Right? So here, the spectral sequence converges. So this is telling me that really, in some sense, this invariant is only interesting for embeddings in codimension 2. But in that codimension, it's very sensitive to which model you pick for the infinity structure. So Lenny's was working with transverse chains. So if you work transverse chains, you get Lenny's invariant. But if you start playing with different models and different way of defining the infinity coalgebra structure, you might get a different answer, because it's really sensitive to moving the coalgebra structure around, which is very strange. So it's hard to compute, but since it's a strong invariant, it's still interesting in those dimensions. And I'm saying, I'm supposing that my conjectures are true for that part. All right, that's all. In S4? No, no, not yet, but I will. I don't know how, but I will. It sounds really cool. I mean, it sounds like if you can get something in that dimension, manage to compute it in that dimension, that would be really cool.
Just because you can't use a spectral sequence proof to show that the different models are equivalent, does that really mean you think that you'll get different answers, or is it possible that you might
have? Well, so the knot computation tells you that you'll get a different answer, because if you take the circle and so every knot up to homotopy is the same. So the fact that you're getting a different answer tells you that you do. It's not recorded, but the specific coalgebra structures are different. But if you're allowed to move within a model category, then you're actually changing your answer. Because if you do this with Hochschild homology, if you have an A infinity algebra and apply Hochschild homology to it, it is robust enough to just see the weak homotopy type of the algebra. But because we're kind of using the product instead of the sum, and that's all we're changing, and somehow all hell is breaking loose.